Obama in your palma. Hurrah, cha, 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 cha.
Dude, why are you dancing around the sink?
I got the coolest thing today. Obama in your palma.
Awada in my where what?
Obama in your palma. It's the latest sudsy creation from Bubble Genius. It's a scaled down version of their Hope on a Rope President Obama caricature soap. This one is hand soap size, so it fits perfectly in the palm of your hand. Obama in your palma.
That is awesome. I'm going to have to get some of those.
Yeah. And there's other political stuff, like Secretary of Suds, the Hillary Clinton soap on a rope. Oh, and look, a soap that says vote, and it smells like apple pie.
A soap that reminds you to vote. What's cooler than that?
And now, a bubbly service announcement.
Hey, bubbleheads! Don't forget to vote this coming Tuesday!
It's really fucking important!
And please, think about who the hell you're voting for.
Do you want a guy who's gonna fight for all of America?
Or some lying douche nozzle who couldn't give one rat's ass about the struggles of the common man?
Yeah, and who's gonna continue to screw the little guy while he fucking takes whatever he well wants?
Vote, vote, vote! The future is in your hands, dude!
We're Bubble Genius, and we approve this message.
BubbleGenius.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Darmok and Gillard. Actinagra.
Our situation is similar to theirs. I understand that. But I need to know more about Darmok and Gillard. You used the words Temba, his arms wide, when you gave me the knife. And the fire. Could that mean give?
Temba, his arms wide. Give me more about Darmok.
Darmok on the ocean.
A metaphor for being alone, isolated.
The beast at Tanagra.
The beast? There was a creature at Tanagra.
Darmok and Gillard, the beast of Tanagra.
They arrived separately. They struggled together against a common foe, the beast at Tanagra. Darmok and Gillard at Tanagra.
Darmok and Gillard on the ocean.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
You can read about it tomorrow, or possibly see it tonight. But with radio, you get it now and get it right.
Here we go!
Is there any possibility that Governor Romney may go to New Jersey to tour some of the damage with you?
I have no idea, nor am I the least bit concerned or interested.
Right.
I've got a job to do here in New Jersey that's much bigger than presidential politics, and I could care less about any of that stuff. I have a job to do. I've got 2.4 million people out of power. I've got devastation on the shore. I've got floods in the northern part of my state. If you think right now I give a damn about presidential politics, then you don't know me.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, November 1st, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez. We're brought to you as every week by BubbleGenius.com. And I got a big box of their new soaps, their vote soap and all of their election soaps. So I want to thank Sarah and Paula for their lovely, lovely gift of very election-related soaps. So. They only have a few more days, for God's sake, Chez. This is the last show before the election. Next show, for better or worse, we're going to be talking about the results of the election. I can't believe it.
Unreal. They grow up so soon.
They grow up so soon. I remember it was just yesterday when we were talking about Herman Cain in the spotlight as being the front runner.
I'm so glad this is going to be over. I understand.
I know. Look, I mean, I live and breathe presidential politics. I love it. But I'm so, I mean, I'm so anxious for November 7th at this point. I mean, really, win or lose, I just want to get through the election and be able to go and just take that big exhale.
Yep.
I mean, that is just varying between low frequency and high frequency stress for, well, it wasn't so bad. It was low frequency stress before the first debate. After the first debate, frequency went higher and higher and has been fluctuating ever since then. It's my stress level. Hmm. I'm so ready for it to be over, like you said. But I mean, I think the way politics are now, really, after the election's over, it's just only going to get started again. Because, you know, we're going to have another debt ceiling debate right on the heels of the election. Win or lose, it's going to be the president versus the lame duck Congress. Possibly the lame duck president, though I don't know for sure. And that brings up a little bit of preview for the after party. On this week's after party, which will be Friday at noon, if you're a subscriber, it's $6 a month. You can cancel anytime. You can sign up right there on bobseska.com. On the after party, I'm going to reveal my prediction for the election.
Pain.
Pain. That's right. Yeah.
Well, Silver's betting a grand on it.
Yeah, I saw that. Nate Silver and Joe Scarborough. And, you know, of course, Scarborough's playing the conventional wisdom card. Just, you know, all of those guys, all the Halperin types. Yeah. Are all over the Romney hype machine. We've got the momentum machine. And they just, because they live and breathe and they rely upon that dramatic script. And we've talked about this many times. We don't need to go into it again. But so Scarborough is in just utter denial over the fact that, look, I mean, if you look at the state by state polls, if you look at the poll averages, you know, the president kind of has this sewn up. I mean, as far as the electoral college vote count, you know, the popular vote, that's another story. And that's why I think, and we're going to talk about this, we're going to talk about Matt Stoller's piece later in the show.
Douche.
Right. But I mean, look, if you're going into this election and you don't think that the popular vote matters, if you don't think that, if you're in a solid blue state or a solid red state and you're like, well, I'm just going to throw my vote away because it doesn't matter with the electoral college, you're dead wrong. You're dead wrong. Because the president wins the electoral vote, loses the popular vote, and then you combine all of that with the crazy conspiracy theorists. And I'm not talking about just the fringe Republicans and conservatives. I'm talking about John McCain. I'm talking about...
Oh, yeah. There will be... The congressional investigations will begin immediately.
Yeah. And looking into the polls, looking into the electoral vote. They're going to be recounting ballots.
Yeah.
And plus they're going
to... Get ready to hear Black Panther Party again, over and yeah, over again.
And then you
Acorn. They'll revive Acorn just to beat it up.
And they're going to combine that with the Benghazi thing, Benghazi Gate, which is a whole other story. I reposted my column on the Huffington Post about Benghazi Gate.
I saw that. Just a ludicrous non-scandal.
Well, it really confirms to me, and I think we talked about this last week. I don't remember for sure. But, I mean, it confirms to me that, once again, if Al Gore had been president during the first 9/11, he would have been impeached. And if President Obama is reelected next week, they will try to impeach him over Benghazi. That's absolutely, I mean, you can bank on that.
No, I think you're right. They're going to try to impeach him over something. It's just the way they think.
Yeah.
They cannot be, we've said this so many times, they cannot be denied. Mm-hmm. They will, and they're pit bulls. They won't let it go.
I mean, you know, I actually saw
it. I had a whole debate on Facebook with somebody about Benghazi. You know, all the questions that aren't being answered about Benghazi. I'm like, look, first of all, we have embassies overseas. Embassies in Arab countries, North African countries have been attacked since the dawn of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's always been a hot spot. There's always going to be violence. There's going to be things you can't afford. And I don't care whether it's a Democratic president or a Republican president. When one of our embassies is attacked and it doesn't come from absolute incompetence or the case of blowback from something really horrible that particular president has done, mm-hmm. then I tend to kind of just be like, you know what, it's horrible, and obviously answers should be gotten, but it is the cost of doing business.
I was just going to say that.
That's exactly what it is. Yep. And to try to say, well, it could have been prevented. Of course it could have been prevented. Mm-hmm. We couldn't have been over there.
Yeah.
And that would have prevented it. But we're in Benghazi. We're in Libya. We're in a freaking hotspot. And that kind of crap is going to happen. It is. It's awful. I'm not in any way downplaying that. And I'm not downplaying the tragedy. And I'm not trying to make it sound like, you know, there shouldn't be, you know, every single detail of it shouldn't be looked into. I'm just saying these people who certainly are trying to make political hay out of it, and for no other reason than because they want to make political hay. You know, you don't see any Democrats screeching about this.
Yeah, no,
it's all
no.
Republicans. And it's all the attempt to find a scandal and hang it around this is basically, it's not even scandal come lately. This is their last best shot for a good scandal. And they're jumping on it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's why, you know, my immediate reaction when I read every single thing I've read about it and everything I've seen, and I'm just kind of like, all right, you know what? There's no there. It doesn't mean the question shouldn't be asked. It just means that the tack that the Republicans are taking on this is freaking ridiculous.
I'd like to see a count. I'd like someone to do like a word count through LexisNexis or something like that. Find out how many times Republican leaders, I'm not just talking about, you know, the AM talk radio hosts and that cabal, the Fox News people. Just let's take the Republican leadership and how many times they've mentioned or condemned the terrorists who attack the consulate versus how many times they've attacked and condemned Barack Obama.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, it really is. You know, if it were the bottom line here in the debate that I was having, I just said, I'm like, this is the unavoidable fact. If it were a Republican president right now, you wouldn't hear any of this.
No.
You would not hear all you would hear about, to your point, all you would hear about is the only people you can blame in this are those terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
It's their terrorists, their fault.
Yeah, evildoers.
Evildoers, right.
Evildoers. We've got to smoke them out.
Yeah, smoke them out of their holes. Get them running.
Yeah, I mean, it would be exactly like 9/11. Because Democrats, liberals, I mean, I would say most of us, are reasonable enough to say, yeah, you know what? Four people are dead. Four Americans. We need to rally around our president, support his efforts to bring the killers to justice, blah, blah, blah. Which is exactly what we did after 9/11. For months and months and months until Bush started politicizing it to get into Iraq. And mm-hmm. That's when we started to say, you know, there's a Michael Moore standing up at the Oscars and saying it's, you know, a phony war and phony duct tape and cellophane or whatever the hell that thing was at the time. But I mean, if you want to talk about it, I've been seeing and getting firsthand accounts from conservatives who are really playing this up to underscore their thesis that that Barack Obama, Mr. Drone Strikes, Mr. Guy Killed Bin Laden, is weak on terrorism because of this one thing. And then in my column, I posted this list that Marcos Melitzis put together. Mm-hmm. Give him full credit for this list because it's effing brilliant. I mean, these were the embassy attacks, the consulate attacks during the Bush years. June 14, 2002, U.S. consulate in Karachi, Pakistan. Suicide bomber kills 12, injures 51.
Mm-hmm.
That's June 2002. February 2003, international diplomatic compound in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Truck bomb kills 17. February 28, 2003, U.S. consulate in Karachi, Pakistan. Same place. Gunmen on motorcycles kill two consulate guards. July 30th, 2004, U.S. Embassy in Tashkent, Uzbekistan. Suicide bomber kills two. December 2004, U.S. consulate in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Militants stormed an occupied perimeter wall. 5 killed, 10 wounded. Should I go on? March 2006, U.S. consulate in Karachi, Pakistan. Again, suicide car bomber killed 4, including U.S. diplomat directly targeted by assailants. September 12, 2006, U.S. Embassy in Damascus, Syria. Gunmen attacked embassy with grenades. 1 killed, 13 wounded. I mean, there are 4 more. I think you get the idea. That was during the Bush
year. We've gone so far through the looking glass that it's only a matter of time now before one of the Republicans gets up there on, like, you know, the House or the Senate floor and starts complaining about why President Obama hasn't taken action against Abu Nazir. Do you watch Homeland? Please tell me you watch
Homeland. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
Abu Nazir is still out there.
Well, we saw something similar to that during the hurricane, which we're going to talk about more on the show today, of course. But when Heck of a Job Brownie said the president didn't respond too quickly to the hurricane.
I don't remember asking you anything. Anything.
God.
If I want to know about Arabian horses, I'll talk to you. Or what it's like to sit next to an ass like David Sirota and do radio shows every afternoon, then I'll talk to you.
Does Sirota do a radio show with Michael Brown?
Oh, he did. He did an entire piece on Salon, the serially stupid David Sirota, as Oliver Willis calls him. And I've swiped that every time I mention him. That is like the official. That's my title for him, the serially stupid David Sirota.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wrote this entire self-serving piece for Salon a while back, where he attempted to sort of he attempted to head off controversy that probably really wasn't there about how, you know, how people who are real liberals have sort of come down on him about the fact that he's basically trying to defend himself because he started doing this show, I think, out of Denver, this radio show every day with Brownie. And yeah, they do like, you know, from the left and from the right. It's crossfire among idiots. It's crossfire where you really hope that both of them are killed.
Man, I'm gonna load that up on Stitcher and listen to every episode if I can find
it. No, I can't. Two people I never, you know, I used to write about Sirota a lot because he was so obnoxious and so full of crap. And then I just, you know, after a while I'm like, you know what, I'm just the it's not even worth it. Because I genuinely think that of all of the sort of you know the divas, you know, the supremes of the political left, Jane Hampshire, Glenn Greenwald, and him, I think that of those three, I think he really is the one who is probably most interested in solely getting his name out there.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm just kind of like, you know what? Everything I write about him, it just, even though I'm small potatoes, it just gives him more press, and God forbid.
Well, Oliver Willis has a theory that a lot of the writers for Salon in particular, I mean, basically that Salon only hires liberals who will troll other liberals.
That's not a bad point.
And that's that's how we got. I mean, Glenn Greenwald has moved on. He's writing for The Guardian now. He's not at Salon anymore. But there was Greenwald. There's Matt Stoller. I mean, the whole rogues gallery of insufferable liberals who...
really count, though. I mean, he really doesn't. God, that piece provoked so much outrage. And the whole time I'm just thinking, you know, Stoller's a douche. I mean, really. So, you know, it's just, I've heard these arguments so many times before. And I know we'll get to it in a bit. But either way, I do agree with you that a lot of times they have they have their liberal trolls. But they also have, you know, I like Joan Walsh. I like Steve Kornacki. You know, I mean, I'm good friends with Mary Elizabeth Williams and love her to death. So, yeah, I mean, I still read Salon pretty regularly because there are a lot of people there who I actually do like.
Well, Matt Stoller added a new layer, and I want to get into that after a break, back after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
And we are back. So Matt Stoller wrote this piece in Salon. Or on Salon, where he basically says it makes the case for why he's not going to vote for Barack Obama for president. You know, we've seen this before. We saw this with Jonathan Turley and John Cusack and their little chit-chat about Rubicon lines and why they're not going to do it. And but I think Matt Stoller, and then we have Connor Friedersdorf wrote a piece, and, you know, you see them all over the place. You can't avoid them. You know, with Matt Stoller, though, added a new layer of horse crap onto all of it. I mean, basically, anarchy. I mean, we're talking about, you know, they're using their vote now. And I haven't seen anyone who is, you know, sort of the anti-Obama progressive who's going to vote third party dispute Matt Stoller's claim that what they want to do is like Tyler Durden-style nihilism, where they're going to crush the system in order to change it.
That's not really a surprise, though. I mean, that's the sort of childish, petulant way that the people who misused the Occupy movement, you know, not the people who really sort of had the right idea, but the ones who you know, who I think completely misused that opportunity. That's their attitude. And by the way, he's really not the first person to say that besides some of the Occupy people. Greenwald, kind of without coming right out and being that blatant about it, that nihilistic, made sort of the same argument once, which is basically that the thing you need to do is it doesn't matter if the country suffers for a little while, because eventually that will lead to progressive change, which, number one, is crap. Absolute crap. It's been proven that it's crap. But number two, it's just, you know, that it's fine when you're not suffering, or it's fine when you're, you know, when you're not someone who really will feel the pain of it.
That's really what they overlook. What they really are is we're talking about people who are of privilege, who really do not, who have not a lot to lose in a situation like that.
They're thoroughly self-obsessed. Thoroughly self-obsessed.
I mean, I just have a hard time believing that they're 100% serious. Are they really saying this? The strategy is this, is the three-pronged plan. Vote against Obama, destruction, progressivism. That's the three-step plan.
It's a childish way of, you know, it's the college radical way of looking at things. Yeah, man, we're going to tear down the system and then it'll be rebuilt as utopia. No, it won't. Yeah. No, it won't. And a lot of people will suffer in the process. And you're a selfish prick for not realizing that.
Right.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. And again, you know, my problem with Stoller is that he seems to be – he's picking fights just to pick fights. You know, he's essentially being one of those sanctimonious trolls.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I expect – I was reading it, and all I could hear was this song in the back of my head. I just fight club, yeah. this song.
Worth my mind.
Yeah, because that's all I kept thinking about is like Matt Stoller and John Cusack and Jonathan Turley standing in that empty office building looking across and seeing all the credit card buildings collapsing in Wilmington, Delaware or wherever it was. But anyway, so yeah,
and the issue is, and it always comes back to this. It always comes back. Now, look, if you're, you know, if you really, if it's so important that you sleep at night because you have to vote your conscience, and you know what, you're bulletproof. I can't get in the way of that. But if you have even an ounce of logic in your head, it goes like this, and this is how it works, and this is math. It's in freaking disputable. Either Mitt Romney or Barack Obama is going to win the presidential election next Tuesday. Simple as that. One of those two men is going to be your next president. So you have the choice of getting some of what you want, you know, someone who actually does care for the most part about your interests, you know, who holds, you know, even if you may not agree with him on everything, he holds a lot of the same views that you do, or is at least willing to go to bat for you for some of it, or you're going to get a guy who will literally laugh in your face. Who thinks nothing like the way you do. And you are going to lose, and a lot of other people are going to lose with you.
Yeah.
And that's your choice. It's as simple as that. It doesn't get any more simple.
Yeah, there's an expectation of ideological and policy purity that comes from these people. And what they're really doing, it really has little to do with that. It seems to me as if it's more of an intellectual exercise. What they want to do is they're actually playing some sort of weird progressive war game, where they're figuring out, okay, well, what do we do? How do we get more progressivism here? And because they're the very serious wise men of the progressive left, you know, because so many, you would not believe the number of people who are utterly deferential to these guys, who just go bend over backwards to make sure that, okay, we're going to, you know, even I did it a little bit in my column about the Matt Stoller piece. I said, well, you know, he's got a point here and there. That's because I'm trying to be reasonable.
Right. No, and I get why you're doing that. I mean, you remember the piece that I wrote about Glenn Greenwald after you and Ben had shown him quite a bit of respect. And I came right out and I said, I don't respect him. I genuinely don't. I think he's a smart guy. You know, I'm not denying that he's not a bright person. But no, I don't respect him one bit.
I mean, they're telling voters to help them break down the entire American system. You know, on the surface, that sounds great. Oh, cool. Let's do that. But what does that actually involve? I mean, this is, I compared it to like Ayn Rand worship.
That's exactly what it is. I was actually thinking that earlier. It's the flip side of the coin from the objectivist nonsense. Mm-hmm. In fact, actually, it's almost not the flip side of the coin. It's almost the same damn coin, you know, the same side.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they have one big thing in common. Which is that it's, well, they have several things in common. One, it's childish. right? It's it's self-righteous. And this is the big one. There is no instance in American history where Ayn Rand objectivism has ever worked, where libertarianism has ever worked, especially post-deep recession.
Right.
And
it's,
likewise,
it's it's another one of those things that you sit around talking about in your college dorm room while you're getting high. Wouldn't it be great if? Yeah. It goes back to that the Ron Paul whimsical jalopy. It's all imaginary. Wouldn't it be great if? I mean, imagine a world where we didn't get involved in anybody else's business ever. Imagine a world where you could smoke weed like right out in the middle of the open, with, no matter what. Even if you were sitting in a crowded theater, who cares? And, imagine a world where that's what it is.
It's imagine a world where you vote for Jill Stein. Suddenly, the system collapses. And we have a new progressive era
suddenly,
begins in America, right?
Gay marriage is mandatory, and a vegan co-op has been built on ground zero.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'd love to see a more progressive America, but I understand how the system works. Anyone with a brain in their head understands how the system works and can also recognize, as I said before, that at no time in American history has there ever been an example of this process actually functioning, where suddenly a bunch of people vote against the two major candidates in a presidential election, and the system collapses, and then out of it is rebirthed the exact agenda that those people who voted against the two presidential candidates wanted.
It's a pipe dream. It's an absolute
it really
pipe
is.
Dream. It is. It's a stoner fantasy.
Yeah. And there's just no – because – because Matt Stoller and Glenn Greenwald and all the rest put together some sort of rational argument, and they're solid writers, I'll give them that, and they know how to research and find the things that back up what they have to say. Just because they do all of that doesn't mean they have a plan or a strategy to do this without massive amounts of pain. And that even assumes that what they are saying will actually work.
Yeah, that it will give them the result that they're looking for.
Well, no,
and
I mean,
it never really has in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just talking about acquiring enough voters to go along with them.
Right.
And I don't even know they'll get that far.
Yeah. And by the way, again, you want to go vote for Jill Stein, you want to go vote for Gary Johnson or whatever, go right ahead. I mean, I think it's dumb. I do. And I would discourage it because I do think that it has certainly a deleterious effect on the election. And on the future of the country. But look, you know what? Seriously, if that's the way you feel, then go for it. But I do get to call you an idiot.
Well, next nearest time that it actually ever kind of almost happened, or when there was a third party that kind of disrupted the election, it was 2000. And I don't think we saw more progressivism coming out of the post-2000 election, unless you're living in some sort of alternative universe. Hey, look, we got to take another break back after this. The last Bubble Genius Bob and Chez show, before the election, that is, brought to you by Bubble Genius each and every week. They've got lots of new election-oriented soaps, so get them now. Buy them now. And make sure to enter your promo code Bob and Chez, BOBANDCHEZ, for 15% off your entire order. And I'm sure they'll ship out right away, and so you can have them for posterity to say you bought this in the great Matt Stoller, Jonathan Turley realignment of America before the collapse. Here's the latest word from Bubble Genius.
Obama in your palma. Hurrah-cha-cha-cha-cha.
Dude, why are you dancing around the sink?
I got the coolest thing today. Obama in your palma.
What? In my where what?
Obama in your palma. It's the latest sudsy creation from Bubble Genius. It's a scaled-down version of their Hope on a Rope President Obama caricature soap. This one is hand soap size, so it fits perfectly in the palm of your hand. Obama in your palma.
That is awesome. I'm going to have to get some of those.
Yeah, and there's other political stuff, like Secretary of Suds, the Hillary Clinton soap on a rope. Oh, and look, a soap that says vote, and it smells like apple pie.
A soap that reminds you to vote. What's cooler than that?
And now, a bubbly service announcement.
Hey, bubbleheads! Don't forget to vote this coming Tuesday!
It's really f***ing important.
And please, think about who the hell you're voting for.
Do you want a guy who's going to fight for all of America?
Or some lying douche nozzle who couldn't give one rat's ass about the struggles of the common man?
Yeah, and who's going to continue to screw the little guy while he f***ing takes whatever he goddamn well wants?
Vote! The future is in your hands, dude.
We're Bubble Genius, and we approve this message.
BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
You really should do it. If you're not subscribed on iTunes, it's free, by the way. If you have iTunes, if you have the Apple iTunes, make sure to download it and then subscribe to the show, because then you'll get the show automatically sent to your iTunes as soon as it's posted. And then maybe give a nice review and tell all your friends about it. The show is actually, the last 2 months of shows have been our highest rated shows in the history of the show. In fact, by like a factor of three or four times. So we really can't thank you enough for listening to the show and subscribe and tell all your friends about it. And then also while you're at it, subscribe to the After Party. That is not free. But it is super, super cheap. Anyway, so where are we with the election right now? We're recording this show on Thursday. The election is on Tuesday, and not soon enough, in my opinion. Which is rare for you to hear me say something like that, because I just I dig the presidential politics all around, but mostly, every 4 years political season. I'm one of those weirdos who gets chastised nightly by Jon Stewart and so forth. But as far as the polls go, I mean, it's looking really good for the president at this point. I mean, state by state, national polls are kind of irrelevant, although they are a predictor of the popular vote. The popular vote is, in fact, important. Matt Stoller, he says, if you're not in a non-swing state, your vote doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, that right there puts his entire argument to rest. Mm-hmm. It just does.
Absolutely matters.
That screams that, you know, the reading between the lines of that is, you know, this argument is coming from a moron.
Precisely. So, Colorado, Rasmussen has Romney up by 3. And of course, we know all about that. Basically, the bias for Rasmussen is 2 points against Barack Obama. So that's, I mean, everyone's kind of discounting Rasmussen. Not even the Fox News polling average doesn't even include Rasmussen, by the way. Colorado, the Call Fire survey in Colorado, Obama's up by 1. Colorado, Obama's up by 2, according to CNN. Florida is tied, according to Newsmax, Zogby. Although I find those guys totally dubious. If you remember 2004, you know exactly why Zogby is dubious. Iowa, Obama's up by 6, according to NBC. Also up by 3, according to Call Fire. Romney's up by 1, according to Rasmussen. Michigan, Obama is up by 8 points, according to PPP. Nevada, Obama's up by 4, according to Survey USA. New Hampshire, Obama up by 2, according to NBC, Wall Street Journal Marist. North Carolina, Romney's up by 1 point from High Point University poll. Ohio, Obama up by 6. That's Newsmax Zogby. I'm getting these numbers from Tegan, so I don't think I deliberately chose Newsmax Zogby or Rasmussen because they both suck.
Have you gone to unskewed polls yet?
Yeah, that's right.
I think I finally mentioned something about unskewed polls yesterday on the blog. And yeah, just it's so far beyond parody. It is so far beyond parody that, you know, he wrote this entire the idiot behind unskewed polls wrote this entire thing for the Examiner slamming Nate Silver.
Yeah,
and it was just. It almost really made me think that it was some kind of like, you know, it's either Andy Kaufman or it's Charlie Kaufman has suddenly discovered that when he writes something, it becomes real. And so, you know, this guy is a product of that. But yeah, just, you know, the argument seemed to be Nate Silver uses math. No, Zog no understand math. Math no good. Here, trust my numbers that I just pulled out of my ass.
Yeah, and by the way, Nate Silver seems kind of gay. That was the thing. That's he actually wrote that.
He said that
Nate Silver is like slender and effeminate. Those are, in fact, those are the exact words: slender and effeminate. That's how he described Nate Silver, the unskilled pole guy.
I want to be described that way to everyone.
Yeah, because he's slender and effeminate. He doesn't know how to do math. That's the leap of logic. Virginia, Obama's up by 3 points, according to PPP. That's good news. Wisconsin, Obama's up by 3. That's NBC. Wisconsin also tied, according to Rasmussen. Wisconsin, Obama's up by 9 points, according to St. Norbert College, which is my favorite of all the Saints, St. Norbert. One last break and more on the polls right after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Yeah, we're back. So, I mean, by all accounts, the president's leading in the state level polls, and it's really not a surprise to see the president kind of pulling away at this point, based on his response to the hurricane. And I think that's a big part of it. And I think we'd be lying to ourselves if we deny the political impact of, you know, simply doing his job and showing up and strongly leading, the relief effort and meeting with Chris Christie. And I mean, that's why I play the Star Trek thing at the top of the show, the Darmok and Jalad episode of Star Trek there, because I got the sense. I'm a huge nerd.
I'm sorry. The what and what of what?
The Star Trek: The Next Generation episode where Picard is sent down to this planet, you know, with this other alien guy, and they have to join forces to fight off this monster. It just reminded me of Obama and Chris Christie joining forces in
that is a reach.
New Jersey. You know what? But Ashby will love it.
I have no doubt. Star Trek for me will always be Kirk and Spock, and I never could get my head around the entire idea of a supposedly good, well-written Star Trek.
Yeah,
I didn't want that. I don't like my Star Trek TV shows to be like that. I like it, you know, crap.
Oh, I love that Next Generation, though.
No, I just got to see that. That really is the area for nerds. That's the domain of nerddom.
Yeah, and the original series isn't.
I was a kid. I was a little kid. During Next Generation, I actually could go out and, you know, get laid. So,
well, see, you remember what I said in the after party earlier in the year. I combined the two.
How did you do that?
I combined the two. I'm not going to go into it on the free show. You have to tune into the after party to find out that.
Yeah, that's a tease.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a money grab right there.
Exactly.
Find out how I combine Star Trek and Star Trek Next Generation and getting laid.
Definitely. It's on one of the early after parties. You subscribe to the after party, $6 a month, right? Cancel anytime. You can go back and you can download that show. It's in the archives. But if you look at the Talking Points Memo poll tracker averages, nationally, the president's leading by 1.3 points. Colorado leads by 2.6. Florida, he's down by 0.5. He's leading in Iowa by 3.7 points. New Hampshire, 3.1. Nevada, 4.2. He's down in North Carolina by 1.5 points. I kind of think North Carolina is kind of out of reach right now, but we don't know for sure. Ohio, he's leading by 3.2. Virginia, 2.5. And Wisconsin, 3.3.
Yeah. How much do you love Christie right now, by the way?
Chris Christie, I still despise the way he's comported himself as governor in terms of his budget cuts and some of the things he's done there. But
the thing about Christie, and I read what you wrote, and I think it's very well said, the idea that he's obviously a leader. Mm-hmm. You know, love him or hate him, dislike his policies or not. And that's the thing about Christie is I want to like him, and I've wanted to like him for a long time because I actually do like the fact that he's, you know, forward, that, you know, he speaks his mind, that he's kind of bombastic. I like that about him.
Yeah, me too.
I don't have an issue with that. I do have an issue with a lot of his policies and a lot of his politics. But, yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, whether this was a political play or not, and I know, oh, dear God, the right's going nuts, the conspiracies that are coming out. You know, my favorite being that I think it was Breitbart the Breitbart site that said that that the reason that Christie did this is because he knows that Mitt Romney is so far ahead that that by doing this he wasn't going to hurt anything.
That's right. That's
and
right.
These are the same people who say that, you know, Obama used the HAARP array, whatever the hell it is, to, you know, to move the hurricane. No, I mean, but I give, you know, I can't stop giving Christie props for really reaching, you know, being more than reaching across the aisle, for just not letting it get in the way, not letting any of those stupid politics. Like John Stewart said, you know, it's amazing the things that can get done and get done well and better when you take all that crappy partisanship that's completely infected our modern politics, when you take that out of it.
Well, and you even compare it to Bobby Jindal, by the way, who, while demanding federal response, demanding federal aid, despite his small government approach, he actually – Bobby Jindal actually kind of tormented the president during the most recent hurricane that – the name of it escapes me – that hit Louisiana a couple of months ago. You know, he actually is like, you know, why isn't this money getting here fast enough? He wanted more and faster. And but the opposite of that is Chris Christie, who was effusive in his praise of the president. And then just, you know, I think ultimately what it comes down to is prioritized, obviously, the job that he has to do and knowing that it will personally benefit him, knowing that, you know, he's done a solid job helping to mitigate the aftermath of the disaster. And, you know, so, I mean, it could only work out well for him in the state, which is all he's responsible for.
Which is all he's responsible for. And I know somebody else said this recently. I can't remember who said it. But, you know, it's a job that he loves, too. You know, he really does. You know, he's got a lot of power. And he, you know, regardless of whether he's doing it for the sake of power, he likes his job. You know, I mean, he does love Jersey. There's no doubt about that.
Well, the other thing,
you know,
too, is,
again, I may disagree with some of his policies, but, you know, that I respect about him.
I mean, it's real. I mean, you want to talk about ballsy? I mean, you know, knowing that he was going to, I mean, he had to have known that he was going to get ridiculed and bashed by so many people on the right. I mean, no one knows that crowd more than Chris Christie. I mean, Chris Christie came in aboard the Tea Party Express in 2010. And so he understands the kind of the fire eating that goes on over there. And knew, and he had to have known that he was just going to get ripped to shreds. Now I'm looking at, I'm trying to find Chris Christie's approval rating, but it's not good in, yeah, in New Jersey. So, I mean, that even makes it even ballsier, knowing that, well, let me see here. This is, I'm bringing it up from May.
Well, Jersey's a largely Democratic state.
Yeah. Chris Christie, his approval rating is 56%. Okay, well, that's good. That was according to a Farley Dickinson University poll.
Yeah,
I've seen others that aren't as sunshiny. I know it was 44% in 2011.
I mean, you know, if he's trying to cast himself, certainly, you know, again, I've heard the conspiracy theories, and one of which is that, you know, by derailing Romney, he sets himself up. He puts himself in a better position for 2016, which, you know, certainly that's not even all that much of a conspiracy theory. That's just probably, if he's really doing it, that's probably just smart politics on his part. But taking a stand against the idiots that, you know, that he is doing by supporting Obama, you know, by being so effusive about his praise for him. I mean, the thing that I think comes out of that for Christie is that, you know, he knows he's in a position where he can actually, you know, he's pretty well beloved and he actually can stand up to those people, I think, mm-hmm, and do it in a way that's not the kind of waffling, you know, the kind of half-assed thing that Romney does. I mean, Christie will smack somebody down, but then also reach out and be just as effusive when he goes off on the other end of the fringe. You know, I mean, so I don't think he may draw a little bit of fire for this, but he's not really going to lose anybody full time.
No, he's not. And I think he understands that, too. And besides, he's made his name.
And I think he knows that. They need him.
I mean, he's really made his bones. He's made his name and his popularity nationwide by being a straight talker, by, you know, kind of ignoring what the standard politician script is.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about purely from an optics point of view. I mean, his policies are kind of just rank and file austerity, Republican tax cutting, you know, social policy cutting Republican. But when it comes to saying things, he doesn't mind, you know, just getting up there like a junior high soccer coach and just blurting out whatever. Because I think that's part of his style, but it's also a very specific part of his strategy. Because, I mean, I think he understands that there's a niche for that. There's a niche of popularity. I think people like that as a refreshing change of pace from the double speak and the sort of the focus group tested lines.
That's exactly what it is, yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why, again, I've wanted to like him. I have, because I like his approach. I may not agree with his politics, but I like his approach. And certainly he gained – I mean, I don't know what he's going to give a crap about me. But, you know, as an American voter, eventually if he has presidential aspirations, you know, he definitely won some points with me this week by being as much of a straight shooter as he was to the point where he's really going to discard partisanship, even when egged on by, you know, Steve Ducey.
Yeah. I mean, I would never vote for him in a million years. For president, we're not voting for, straight talking. We're voting for a policy agenda, and his policy agenda would be destructive. I mean, if we're talking
here's my issue with that. And this is something I wrote this week for Banter. And I know you've talked about it too. One of the reasons why I have such a difficult time, voting for, you know, say a Mitt Romney is because of all of the people, like Bill Maher said this, I think, last week on a show, all the people that Romney is bringing with him, the people he's pandered to, the people whose asses he's really kissed, you know, the anti-science people and the birthers and, you know, and the anti-gay people and, you know, all of that crap. And one of the things that, you know, so my attitude has been, even if I liked some of Romney's policies, which I don't, by the way, I can't reward his brand of scorched earth politics. I can't reward the right's brand of scorched earth politics right now. And I can't reward the amount of pandering that he's done. If a Republican came along, and I've always said, I don't have an issue with everything Republicans think. I certainly have a very big issue with the way they comport themselves these days. And that's one of the things. Like I said, I can't reward a Republican Party that is this stupid, this awful, this anti-intellectual. You know, but what I do like about Christie, again, is if he winds up being someone who can stand up to those people within his own party, then it, to me, it makes him more of a centrist. And that's something where I can at least look at and say, all right, look, I need to put it this way. That's something where I can look at him and say, all right, you know what? I'm going to go back and I'm going to look at his policies and I'm going to really, really see what it is that he stands for, as opposed to just saying, and there is that part of me now that just says, look, you know what? You're a Republican and I've watched you pander to two people, even if you're willing to pander to a couple. I watch that and I see who's on your side and I see who's supporting you and I just can't get behind that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's but I don't think he'll stand up to his own party when it comes to telling Steve Ducey where to stick it on Fox News Channel, something that he's going to actually win. I mean, that's
true.
I mean, Chris Christie in New Jersey is going to be riding sky high with approval in New Jersey. And it's mainly because he's not doing anything here that runs sort of contra policy agenda. Like he's not doing anything that's out of the ordinary as far as what every governor is doing.
Right.
So, I mean, he's not going to, the Republicans in Congress say, you know, we want to slash and burn, you know, the Department of Education. He's going to go, well, okay, let's do that.
Right.
Or we're going to, you know, I mean, any number of things. We're going to, you know, we're going to make sure that there's still a nationwide ban on same-sex marriage. Well, okay, fine. I did that in New Jersey. I'll do it again nationally. He's not going to stand up to them on policy. He'll stand up to them on, you know, style things and, you know, why aren't you campaigning with Romney, blah, blah, blah. And because he's got nothing really to lose there. Because he's still achieving the things that the Republican base really kind of wants, and that's what that's why they will continue to support him, and that's his calculus. You know, they're not going to ultimately care whether or not he toured Brigantine with the president.
Yeah.
After Hurricane Sandy, they're going to care about, well, did he make sure to cut social programs and to cut taxes on the super wealthy?
No, that's fair. No.
So I mean, I think, but
right. I mean, certainly, something like a natural disaster provides a shield when you need it from politics as usual, should you decide to take it.
Yeah. I think his selling point in the Blue States is basically going to be, yeah, that maverick selling point. Like, hey, I told Fox News and Fox and Friends where to stick it when they asked me if I was going to tour the devastation with Mitt Romney. Fine, but you have to differentiate that from, you know, when the rubber hits the road on policy. Chris Christie going to outline in his convention speech? What is he going to outline in his first State of the Union? I assure you it's not going to be many things that liberals and blue state people are going to enjoy hearing. So we got to make sure that if this guy is running for president, we understand what the stakes are and we understand what, you know, what his actual policies will be. And they're not going to be that sort of F everybody, a Goomba kind of good guy, soccer coach kind of attitude. So, yeah, I think we should be cautious. But the other thing that I kept running through my head watching the apocalyptic scenes from Manhattan and so on is that I don't even know if this is, and a lot of people are talking about the climate crisis now. So suddenly, you know, Governor Cuomo in New York is talking about this.
Well, absolutely, it's a cover story of Bloomberg.
The same. I mean, even Chuck Todd, for God's sake, was saying this is, you know, Hurricane Sandy is a consequence of global warming. I mean, this is all going to, I mean, we're going to reach a fever pitch now where, you know, you're going to see in polls, vast majority of Americans supporting climate change legislation, climate crisis legislation, as I borrow the Al Gore term for it. But ultimately, when it comes down to actually passing legislation, the same thing that we've seen happen with health care and climate crisis legislation during the Obama administration, as soon as the law starts to sluice through Congress, everyone abandons it. American people polls actually end up disintegrating. I remember after Sicko came out, there were a bunch of polls about health care reform, and I think it enjoyed like 80% support. And these people saying, yes, the government should organize the healthcare system. Absolutely, we need to do this. We absolutely need universal healthcare. Like 70, 80% of the American people wanted it. But as soon as the president came in and tried to legislate against it, even a more watered down version of that, you know, people ran away and said, government takeover. We don't want that. Get your government hands off our Medicare. Blah, blah, blah. We also saw with the global warming right after An Inconvenient Truth. The same poll numbers, sky high. We need to do something about it. It didn't get much publicity because it happened in and among the healthcare reform debate. But the whole climate change package that the president wanted to pass died in Congress. All he was able to do is pass individual things like, increasing emissions standards and so forth. You know, some money spent on clean energy. I don't know what it's going to take for Americans to get behind clean energy in a serious way and stick with it. Because it certainly wasn't the most massive oil spill in the history of the United States of America in the Gulf. It wasn't all of the hurricanes. It wasn't the wildly off-the-charts record temperatures. Maybe it's Hurricane Sandy. I don't know.
The assholes on the right who are saying that, well, you know what, there was a really, really big storm back in, 1812, so.
Yeah. I was talking to my dad, and he said, well, boy, I said, you know what, they're really going to have to beef up infrastructure in Manhattan, create some dikes or some sort of protective walls like they have in the Netherlands, you know, to make sure that the rising oceans don't do it. He's like, my dad is super conservative, says, oh, this is a this is a 100-year storm. When's it going to happen again? I don't think it'll happen again for a while. Well, you know, they said that about Katrina, too. And how many times has New Orleans been hit? You know, how many summers have we had record temperatures? It's all happening right now. It's not some far-off thing that, oh, you know, we got to do something now or else, you know, 20 years from now, global warming is going to get us. We're in it. We are absolutely in it.
Yeah,
I mean, and you know what? There was one other thing about climate change regarding the election. And you know what? I'm kind of glad that the candidates didn't really, or at least it wasn't really brought up in the debates, because I think the best way to approach legislation on climate is to do it quietly. You know, I wonder if we would have had maybe Medicare for All or something like that. If it was just a quiet little line in the dark depths of the Affordable Care Act, something that no one talked about, that no liberals started a campaign for and all that, they just snuck it in there. However, there is one thing in the Affordable Care Act that we're going to talk about on the after party that is actually really, really, really good news amongst other bits of good news from Obamacare. So we're going to get to more politics during the after party. That's tomorrow at noon, Friday at noon. Make sure to subscribe to $6 a month. You can cancel at any time. Do so at bobsesca.com. Click the after party link at the top of the page. And we'll see you tomorrow. Take care.